This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Senator Tom Daschle has served in Congress for 25 years, but the 107th Congress was by almost any measure extraordinary. In a new book called Like No Other Time, the South Dakota Democrat chronicles the 2001-2002 sessions, what he calls the 2 years that changed America forever. The period saw the September 11th terrorist attacks and the anthrax mailings, one of which targeted Daschle's own office. On top of that, there was a rare partisan split in the Senate, followed by a temporary Democratic majority, which ended with the 2002 election. In his behind-the-scenes memoir, Senator Daschle pulls no punches, detailing his party's own failures and criticizing the GOP leadership as a group that, quote, rules by fear and intimidation.
I don't think you can talk about what has happened over the course of those 2 years without being as fully candid as possible. I try to balance my candor and my assessment with the praise that I find for both the president as well as our Republican leadership. But I think simply to try to put spin on it or to gloss over some of these very significant concerns was just not something I could do.
I thought one of the more extraordinary passages in the book was your description of the initial meeting between you and President Bush, where he met you in your office, and he said that he hoped that the two of you could work well together. But he went on to say something else, which gave you quite a bit of pause. What was it that he told you?
Well, it struck me as a little unusual that right out of the box, after we had talked for maybe 10 minutes or so, he said, I hope you never lie to me. And I was struck by that. I thought that was an odd statement to make. The fact that we didn't know each other that well would not lead me to assert there's even the implication that somebody would lie to the other. I responded that I hope the same could be said of him and we would work together. But it was an odd moment in what was otherwise a reasonably cordial and friendly discussion about a number of things that lasted about a half hour.
And as time went on, what kind of relationship did develop between the two of you?
Well, I think it's been a very complex relationship. There were times right after 9/11 that I don't think I've ever worked closer with the President of the United States or, for that matter, with any Republican. I think once the obstructionist charges began and the polarization was so much more apparent, then it became a little different.
The obstructionist charges, these grow out of a memo that you include in your book, which was distributed by a pollster outlining something called the National Unity Agenda, which called for everyone in the Republican Party to start using the phrase Daschle Democrat and the word obstructionist in the same sentence. It seemed like they had you in their crosshairs.
It was orchestrated, and obviously it became even more apparent when the vice president went on one of the Sunday talk shows to use that phrase, and it was then, of course, repeated over and over by Republican leadership and the rank and file. But I think that has been a strategy ever since, in varying degrees and at various levels of success.
You know, I imagine one of the more difficult passages for you to write about was the events surrounding that fall when those anthrax letters arrived in your office. You describe how there was such a potent form of anthrax in those letters, and enough of it to actually kill or harm everyone in the Hart office building. And when something like that happens, I imagine that you emerge from that perhaps unharmed, but not unchanged. How has this affected you?
Well, in so many ways, I had never thought that there would be somebody out there who would actually try to take your life. I'll never forget one of the police officers at one point said, the bottom line, somebody's trying to kill you. And just that blatant observation, that extraordinary comment has left an indelible mark in my own mind. And that sense that you're now required to be a little more cognizant of circumstances that not only could affect you in an adverse manner, but your family and your staff.
What are your thoughts on the investigation? Why is it that 2 years later we seem no closer today to finding the culprit?
I'm troubled by that, Michelle. I don't really know what reasons we can give. The FBI occasionally will come in and brief us on the status of the investigation. They clearly believe that this can be solved, but at least to my knowledge, we're not any closer now than we were maybe 6 months ago.
Do you still travel with a full security detail?
I do.
Everywhere
yes,
you go?
Yes, everywhere I go.
There's this story in the book where you describe, I guess at the height of the security, when you received a package at your home with Jerk of the Month printed on the outside, and I guess this gave your security detail a real headache.
Well, it was one of those moments that you look back now and laugh, but a box that occurred, and it was on our front steps, and unfortunately, we always go in the back door, and we went to bed that night not having checked the front door, and the security detail found the box on the steps, and it said Jerk of the Month on the outside. They called the bomb squad and the dogs, and during the middle of the night discovered that it wasn't a bomb, it wasn't anything to be concerned about, it was the jerky that I get from South Dakota, and fortunately the dogs had the good sense to leave my jerky alone.
And what kind of jerky was it?
It was beef jerky, pretty good stuff.
Senator, your book also includes some photographs, and one of them, I guess, is a classic case where a picture really tells a story. It's on the morning after the 2002 midterm elections, and you can see so clearly in this picture the pain and frustration. This must have been a very, very difficult time for you.
We were confident we were going to pick up seats. That was the conventional wisdom. And to see just hour by hour as it unfolded, each and every one of these states not turn out as they expected. And not only that, to have the surprise of a Max Cleland and a Gene Carnahan in Missouri, and for all that to play itself out, you can't even describe the exhaustion both mentally and physically.
Do you feel that you bear some personal responsibility for the outcome of that election?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you can be leader and not take responsibility for things like this. I look back and I wish we'd have put a greater effort on turnout. I wish we could have maybe done some things differently in a couple of the races. I don't think our message was nearly as articulated or enunciated as I wish it had been.
Senator, you're now the minority leader. There was a time when you were the majority leader in the Senate. How difficult was it to switch roles?
Oh, it's difficult. Clearly, the majority has a very significant advantage, and not to be there when we know that there is so much that we could do and would do were we in the majority is a frustration. But we're doing well. We expect to take it back one of these days.
Senator, if the numbers are not in your favor and you don't win enough seats to take back control of the Senate, will you step away from the leadership?
That's not my intention. Obviously, at times like that, I think it's important that you stay. One of the reasons I didn't run for president this time is we had lost the majority and we're back in the minority and I inherited it 8 years ago. And I think that it's important for us to try to do all we can to pull together and to build on what we've been able to do so far.
Senator Daschle, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Senator Tom Daschle is the minority leader of the Senate. His book is called Like No Other Time, the 107th Congress and the 2 years that changed America forever.